Well, hi everybody, it's the Week in the Tackle podcast, the podcast where we look at the previous week in football and or soccer, delete as appropriate, and try and tackle the stories that we find interesting. I'm the radio personality Tom Rennie. Hello. Alongside me for today's programme is MLS legend, Apple broadcaster, SiriusXM FC broadcaster, TNT broadcaster, and I imagine local fire warden, Brian Dunseth. How are you, mate? You right?
Hello. I'm doing fantastic, Rennie. I'm busy. I do have both vehicles at my property, unlike somebody here on this podcast. But yes, access to vehicles are a good thing, especially when you have to pick your kids up from school and yes. Make sure they get home.
Yes, we are recording the program an hour later than planned because my garage, who are usually very fine people in case they're listening and they've still got my car, they're usually very nice people. They didn't call me to say it was done. I tried to call them on two occasions. Nobody answered. I walked round to the garage, which is next to the nursery where I put my kids in, and they were shuttered up. I mean, I'm all for going home early. I think that's a noble pursuit. But A, not when you've got my f***ing car. Sorry, Tim. And B, on a Tuesday? Come on, guys. Hey, this economy's on the ground because of people like you hitting the arches on Main Road when you should be fixing my car. Right, I'm not annoyed about it. I walk the kids home. It's fine. It's fine. Anyway, lots to talk about on today's programme. The international break is thankfully over. Interminable they are. But there are some interesting stories I do want to get Danny's view on. We'll talk about the USA beating and then losing to both Trinidad and Tobago and what exactly Serginho Dest was doing. We might do some England, but I'm not particularly interested. But I might ask Danny one or two questions on that. And also, did UEFA want Italy in the European Championship to such a degree they stole it from Ukraine, who are going through a lot right now and probably could have done with the fillip of making the European Championship? I don't know. Alexander Seferin may or may not agree. We'll get into all of that. Let's start with the Americans, because I love when the US men play soccer, mainly because of the collective meltdown of, we're not Brazil. What's happening? Why aren't we Brazil? Because you're not Brazil. Give your players fancy nicknames better than Jedi, and you might be as good as Brazil. I don't know. It's a terrible nickname. Star Wars is awful, and he's an adult man.
How dare you?
So for those that haven't seen this, I'm sure most people listening have. It's Nations League. It's quarterfinals. The first game was an easy 3-0 victory. That was three late goals on Friday, Saturday, last week, end of last week. The second leg is a kind of, it was a gimme, right? It's over. 3-0. They weren't going to turn it over. Or were they? Anthony Robinson scores a great goal as crossed in by Serginho Dest, who then gets sent off for, I'll let Dunning describe this in more detail, but basically, number one, he kicks the ball away because he thought the ball was in or out down the sideline for some inexplicable reason, and then has a go at the referee post yellow card, blows him a kiss to such a degree that both Tim Ream, Matt Turner and several others were like, what are you doing right now? Why are you doing this? They scored two goals, TNT. The second one shows you why Arsenal let Matt Turner go. But Arsenal are but United States through to the final four or the semi-finals or however you want to look at it. And also they qualify for Copa America 24 as well. So loads of good stuff in there. But Dunny, you're our Mr. America. You're Captain America for us, but not like the good one, more like the Falcon one. So like you're like our Billy Buck?
Yeah.
Billy Bucky Barnes?
Something
Billy
like
Boo-Boos?
That.
Something like that. Close. You're our Billy Bucky Boo-Boos in terms of Captain America's. Let's start with the Dest thing. Forget the game for the minute.
He don't care about the game.
No, I don't give a shit. Sorry, Tim, but it's wacky. This is a wacky thing. What on earth has happened here?
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. And listen, let me put context to this. I got a red card in Olympic qualifying. I almost cost the United States a spot at the 2000 Olympics. Ball comes over the top of Steve Cherundolo. I've got the Canadian front runner striker off my shoulder. I pop the ball up over him. I keep possession. He hits me, tackles the ground, drives my face, puts a forearm into my face, and I lost it. I don't know. Red mist. I grabbed him by his legs. I stood up. I was like, oh, sorry, Tim. I let go. He fell over. He got a red card. I got a red card. And we ended up winning, and we ended up going through, and we qualified. But I actually had to go back home. I was sent back to the New England Revolution because I was suspended for the final game. And that was the qualifier to get us into the Olympics. And yeah, it sucked. It cost me like $2,000. That was my fine. And I, it was I was concerned that not only I'd lost my place in the team, but I'd also potentially lost the captain's armband. So I put this in context because I've been there.
Yeah.
But I'd only been there for an action, right? It was an actionable offense versus another player. And it's almost like you can understand in the moment, like when someone gets stuck in, right? You can understand the red mist, the kind of Vinnie Jones tackle, if you will, where all of a sudden it's like, and you go through them. This one, I got to be honest with you, I've never seen anything like it. I could not believe what I saw. And for context, he's up the line. He thought there was a foul, the previous buildup. Tim Ream hits a switch. It kind of gets away from him. He runs. It looks like he keeps it in, but maybe marginally it goes out and whatever. It's like, it's really innocuous. You're up 4-0 in aggregate. Everything's comfortable. And my man picks the ball up and kicks the living out of the ball. I mean, reports had it landing outside of the stadium. It was like the legitimacy of like, it was like Sunday league football. It was like indoor league. Like it's something like again, a kid who grew up in the Ajax system, a kid who's was bought by Barcelona, a kid who was on loan at AC Milan, the kid who plays Champions League at PSV. I got to be honest with that. What are all the words, right? Petulant, immature, naive. I mean, if I had a catalog of words that I could go on, I probably would. But Cal State Fullerton only gave me 3 semesters. I just have never seen anything like it. And then I'll tell you what happened. It's not that kicking the ball got him the second yellow.
Yeah.
It got him the first yellow. And it wasn't the blowing the kisses, which ballsy after you pick up a yellow card.
So odd. So odd. The oddest bit for me was the kisses.
But you know what? That's the giant fuck you, right? Sorry, Tim. That's what he's doing. But yeah. I'll tell you what. First time when he covers his mouth, I don't know if it's in English or Spanish, he's saying the magic words. Then he walks away, he turns, and he does it again. And then one more time, three times. So kicking the ball out of the stadium, blowing the kisses, and then the three times with the curse words. And to the point where even after he's red carded, he's turning and giving the business underneath his hand to Tim Ream. He's turning, giving the business underneath his hand to Matt Turner.
Ream's pretty clear about what he's saying as well, isn't he? I mean, Tim Ream does not cover his mouth.
What the fuck are you doing? Sorry, Tim. Not Tim Ream, but sorry, Tim Horsey. Yes.
Tim Ream.
Yeah. Eunice walks over. Gio looks like a stud. Ream's making his way over. But like, I saw someone be like, oh, you got to be a captain in that situation, bro. You got to like run over and like calm him down. No, like, come on. My man's 23 years old. This whole like, It's too young. It's too this. It's too that. Players lose it all the time. Players pick up stupid yellows. But I found myself thinking like, what could possibly spark this situation to the extent that it just unfurled so quickly? Like it unraveled so quickly that he puts in jeopardy the game. He puts in jeopardy Nations League. He puts in jeopardy Copa America. So all of these things in that moment, we talk about like the selfishness of the individual within the collective. It happens. Sorry, Tim. I get it. I've been a part of it. I've done it. I understand these moments.
Yeah.
But I almost like, I wonder what's going on in his life outside of the game.
Gotta be.
For this to happen so quickly, because this is a really experienced player. For as much as, you know, he's 23 years old.
He's football experienced. People start when they're 17. Ajax, he's been in
Barcelona,
4 countries.
Yeah. AC Milan, PSV. He is really, really experienced. And now what he's done by this action, you go back to what happened in June with Nations League and when Weston McKennie and he both got sent off in the semifinals against Mexico and getting baited into the moment where he's shown red. So now he holds the title being the only U.S. player that's been red carded in 2 occasions in a calendar year. Now there's going to be questions about his temperament. I already saw it on social. Everyone's going to be like, oh, you think Trinidad Tobago's an issue? Wait until Argentina gets underneath your skin. Wait until Uruguay gets underneath your skin. So now you're a target, right? Now everybody knows that maybe psychologically they can dig at you a little bit. So it's a horrible night. I really do feel for Sergiño Dest. I don't think...
Do you?
I do. Because I'm trying to take the human nature part of this. Take the action away. The actionable offense will have consequence. And the consequence isn't just going to miss the next game. I could see the consequence also not being called into the next camp because you have
He's going to be banned, so he won't come to the next
camp. For a game. And you're talking, he's going to be banned for Nations League. But I'm saying I could see in the January window him not being called in. I could see the consequences completely different what happened with Weston McKennie and Nashville during qualifying years ago, kind of in that COVID whirlwind or whatever was happening when he was sent away from camp, had to work his way back. And it was more of like a symbolic, this is a rule breaking outside of the team. This is something that's happening in the game where it's controllable, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not a mano y
mano. It wasn't a high pressure situation. No, someone's been nibbling at you all game. Nothing. FA Cup semi final, World Cup semi final, whatever.
40-second minute
scenario. It's over. Yeah. It's a dead game in a half empty stadium on a random Monday, and he just lost it. It's weird. Can I throw one speculation at you? I don't want to do too much speculation on. You know, you mentioned it there. Something's going on that we don't know about. Now, this might sound borderline xenophobic, so feel free to jump on me here. I'm all for different countries having their footballing cultures, not the same as mine. If you go to Germany and they have the guy at the front with the megaphone starting the chant like you're doing songs of praise, absolutely fine. That's your thing. I think it's total crap. But if you enjoy it, it's your football culture. That's fine. If you go to a World Cup in South Africa and people want to get the
vuvuzelas,
that's fine. Again, it sounded absolutely awful and I thought it was total rubbish, and I am perfectly within my rights to say that is total rubbish and I don't like it. You can do it. I will tolerate it. Toleration is a very much underappreciated word in the world we currently live in. I will tolerate it. I'll think it's absolutely rubbish, but I'll tolerate it. The sound of that stadium in Trinidad and Tobago. I watched about 8 minutes of highlights before the football show on Sirius XMFC on the Tuesday, and it actually gave me a migraine just watching it. The sound of... It's like... And this is the England band, too. If you've ever been to a game where England are drawing 0-0 at home against Malta in the 75th minute, and they do the theme to The Great Escape, someone hand me a noose. Like, it's just awful. It's just absolutely... For me, not them, but either way. But just like the sound of it, what did you think? Could that have? Because I know it would have wound me up to such a degree, I might have booted the ball outside the stadium. I might have done a Vinnie Jones two-footer. Is there any chance that awful, ongoing, ragtag sound they were doing, which I'm sure is very intrinsic to the Caribbean football culture, but it's appalling to me and I would hate to play in it. Any chance he might have gone, I don't know, I wasn't quite ready for this sound that's pissing me off to such a degree. That's what made him lose it. It's always the smallest things. It's not the fact the wife left you that annoys you. It's that she also took the tea bags. You know, that's the thing. That's the final straw.
Yeah, go away on vacation, land on a Southwest flight, and a goddamn marching band comes pounding out of your bedroom. I don't think it's the sound. But listen, I was in Jamaica with the national team, and you should have seen these 12-foot speakers, and a dude rolls in with a Cadillac Escalade with spinners, and he's the DJ and the hype man, and there's like a haze of smoke, and it's not that type of smoke, but it's that type of smoke. And it was an incredible experience. I mean, you... Some of these friendlies or international games or CONCACAF qualifiers, you see guys with AK-47s surrounding the track. I mean, and like guard dogs, like right next to them. So they all have their own elements. And I know we've kind of talked about this, and I know there's always like this kind of like joke about CONCACAF and the region, blah blah blah. But there is an element to it that's unexplainable. And the one thing that I will say is, on nights like this, where I was really proud of the performance from Trinidad Tobago, because it was their opportunity when everything was going wrong, and a team that's really trying to figure out who their identity is with this group of players. There's one thing that you know when you step on the field and you're wearing that U.S. crest, is that the team across from you hates you. for whatever reason, and it could be anything from the political side, or it could be from, hey man, this is our game, it's not your game. Or it'd be like,
I think the reasons that people hate America in the same way they hate Britain are pretty obvious.
Well, yeah, you like, oh, this dude's rocking $300 pair of cleats. Look at that crispy white jersey. I'm gonna stick him. You know,
$60 for a hat.
Yeah, $60 for a hat, but it is waterproof. And it's great on a cruise. There's something about desire, DNA, history, and you go back in you know, 1989 was a shot heard around the world. While Paul Caligiuri ends up hitting that left foot volley from outside the box, which qualifies the United States in that game for the World Cup for Italy. We won't talk about John Doyle. We won't talk about the red card. We won't talk about how Trinidad and Tobago deserved something out of that game, similar to Ukraine. And then the history of 2017. So there's always, when I try to explain CONCACAF to people that don't know CONCACAF, when we say like CONCACAF After Dark or That's So CONCACAF, there's just like that moment last night when Sergiño picks the ball up and kicks the fuck out of the thing. Sorry, Tim, out of the stadium. Like, that's so CONCACAF. Like, now you get it. When I say like, dude, that's CONCACAF. Like, that's so CONCACAF. You'd be like, oh, Sergiño Dest kicking the crap out of the ball 80 yards away.
Yeah.
That's CONCACAF for you.
One brief thing I want to mention, in case people don't know all about the USA 1990 qualification and the World Cup campaign. I read a brilliant article last week or the week before on the BBC website by a guy called Adam Elder, and it's called USA at the World Cup 1990. Bags of urine, cans of bud, and a groundbreaking campaign. I read this last week sometime. I didn't know that much about it. I, of course, knew they were in it, but I didn't know a great deal more about it. But I would say it's worth your time if you do want a little bit of this story and the kind of context of the USA at that time and all that sort of stuff. So search it out on the BBC website for more information. I thought that was really interesting. A final bit from me on this, then I want to just get any final thoughts from you before we move on. Matt Turner is an interesting character. I was watching, again, the highlights, the TNT highlights the following morning. We don't get the game live here. And the winning goal on the night, it's a free kick from distance, and you'll know who the TNT COCOM was. I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, Kyle Martino.
Thank you. And he's desperately trying to, he's kind of saying like, oh, there's like swaz on this ball, or it's spinning, or look at this knuckleball effort. It's going to move at the last second, something like that. Yeah. And then it goes to a camera behind the shot where you realize, oh, it don't do anything. Hmm. It just sort of goes straight and slows down and it goes in. That's bad goalkeeping, buddy. That's my boy Aaron Ramsdale wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Or David Raya for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you shout me out on a football show. I was in the car. I heard you maliciously invoking my name alongside Rocky Ray Hudson.
You're just the biggest American homer that I know. So okay, you're my reference point for someone who's so blinded by their patriotism. They can't say that Matt Turner is a substandard goalkeeper.
I would probably say Miola is more of a homer than I am.
I'm
but
not
going to
slag off Miola. What am I, fucking stupid?
Get out of you. Sorry, Tim.
What about an idiot?
Listen, who was it? Alvin Jones hit the living crap out of that ball.
Did he?
He smacked that ball so well. And he hit it off the shoulder of the whoever was on the end of the wall. Listen, it wasn't great. Didn't cover himself in glory. He'll want it back. He'll know that he needed two strong hands. I think the speed of the ball is obviously what beats him and doesn't allow him to get two strong hands to it. It's got to be stronger. I do think there was movement on the ball. What I saw, and I understand what Kyle saw because Kyle was in studio. They were not in Trinidad and Tobago. They were in Atlanta. Was when you look at it from the side, the way that ball takes off, it comes up and kind of like, it doesn't get up and down. It kind of arcs, but it's coming in. And if you watch Matt's, and Tony would be better at breaking down this from a goalkeeper's perspective, but when you watch Matt's hands, he doesn't get his hands up quick enough because I think he's worried about the ball coming back into his body as he's jumping to his right-hand side. So that's me analyzing what I would see in a replay version of what in real time just happened. But I remember I was sitting with my phone at my little boy Luca's training session, and I just went like, "Oh, that's not a good one. Sorry, Tim. Yeah, that's one he's gonna want back." And then, you know, like, then you get a little bit of PTSD from a U.S. perspective, because then it's what, 57th minute, there's 33 minutes remaining. You got a 2-goal cushion, the aggregate, you're down a man. We haven't really talked about Berhalter's substitutions. He was kind of thinking about how to protect Gio a little bit, allegedly, after when he comes out and he says, "Well, I was going to take Gio off at halftime anyways." I mean, we can talk tactics and we can talk about, well, why would you leave Ricardo Pepi up top? And maybe would you sacrifice a flow instead? You know, try to make a Christmas tree formation, keep everybody in front of you. They got super loose defensively. Even at one point, Scally was on the left-hand side getting beat with a ball up over the top. It very easily could have been 3-1 Trinidad Tobago with 15 minutes left. So while history will tell us, like, oh, it's a bad result, but they qualified, right? They go to the semifinals of Nations League in June. They're going to go into Copa America. They qualified. Everything's fine, dandy. Yeah, this is going to be one for Greg and his staff that they are going to just pull apart with a fine tooth comb, yeah, and find every bit of teachable moment that they can to then show accountability. But I wish I was a fly on the wall in that locker room to understand at halftime what that looked like and what that meant, because you could tell from the body language. I think there's a feel-good factor in this in a way. One of the data points for me is that you got some leaders in this group, and you got leaders that are going to hold guys accountable for actions that are individualistic within the collective.
I want to move us on, because there's a few other stories that I think are worth some of our time on today's program. And Italy have made it. Italy have made it to the European Championship. Of course, they won the last one, having just stolen it in the final by, firstly, Chiellini assaulting Bukayo Saka. He should be in prison, Chiellini. Never mind winning MLS Cup. He should be, don't blame Gareth for Chiellini's assault on poor Bukayo. And also, penalties and that. But they've made it this time, despite the fact they have stumbled through qualification. The manager left to coach Saudi Arabia. And I think he lives in a Scrooge McDuck vault now. the previous manager, Spalletti, is now in charge. Such a great game. Spalletti is now in charge. 0-0 in Ukraine. Now, it was delicately poised in the group on the same amount of points. Italy had a better goal difference, so a draw always favoured Italy. Ukraine had to find a way to break down Italy. In the stoppage time of this game, it's 0-0. Mykhailo Mudryk, yes, he of our match fame, he takes on Brian Cristante of Italy. Now, penalties are a subjective discussion, right? You might think one is a penalty. I might not think something is a penalty. I thought the Rico Lewis penalty given for North Macedonia against England was a bit of a farce, actually. But I was surprised to hear Ray Hudson, when we were chatting earlier on Tuesday, say he could see how it was a penalty. You know, my mind was a bit blown by that. But that's an argument that, you know, you can have ad nauseum. This one not being a penalty, Mudryk on Cristante, is a real noodle scratcher, right? So he picks it up in the penalty area. He pushes and runs around the Italian defender. The Italian defender holds out the right leg. It's planted on the ground, but he clearly, unequivocally catches the shin of Mudryk. There is contact worthy of a penalty. It is not a Mudryk draws the foul and jumps over it. It is initiated by the Italian defender. It is not given on the field, and it is not given on VAR review, despite the officials checking it. Now, I have a conspiracy theory on this, but just, Danny, on the incident itself, what did you make to this, and did you think it was as clear a penalty as I did?
Would your conspiracy theory involve a figurehead at UEFA talking about the need and necessity for Italy to be at the Euros themselves?
It does have that involved in my conspiracy theory, I don't want to go down that road until you tell me that I'm right here. Because after Hudson told me about Rico Lewis earlier today, I don't know if I'm right. I feel like I'm right. I must be right.
Well, so here's what I would say. Yes, it does fall into this gray area category. Was it egregious enough for the entire world to lose their, you know, lose their minds? Probably not. It wasn't like it was boot to boot, or it was boot to shin, or it was even boot to body to ball. This was a step across, planting their foot where it literally then draws the contact of Mudryk, who's already in his turning phase, to get his shot off. For me, it's a stone cold penalty. Stone cold penalty for me. I can understand how people would make the argument that it's not, but if we're talking about impeding his progress to get to the ball, Cristante, by putting his foot in a place where he didn't need to, he chose to, he is drawing the contact of Mudryk's natural positioning going to get his shot off. So for me, it's a penalty. And I think the egregious part of this is the history of understanding what the quote was earlier this week, and just knowing that in the moment, it's such a big moment that I think we all kind of think, well, does the referee, and this is an instinctual thing now because of VAR, does the referee think just for a second, well, if I missed it, he's got my back?
Yeah.
Because in that moment, I just wonder if VAR says, I think you need to take a look. There's contact. Because all we want is for the referee to have a chance to make it right. And that's kind of the purpose of what VAR, it's in the conversation of what VAR has been brought to the forefront with, is if it happens so quickly and a referee misses it, can he have the opportunity to make the right decision? I think if he's suggested to go to the monitor, that's a penalty. But by virtue of hesitating, not maybe wanting to make the big call in the dying seconds of a match, which everybody knows that would have meant Ukraine would have had the opportunity from the penalty spot to qualify for Euros and knock Italy out of the Euros, I just wonder if he hesitated thinking, well, he's going to get me, he's got my back and he's going to get it right no matter what.
The other element to this, the macro of it, is a really interesting angle here in terms of Alexander Seferin. Now, Alexander Seferin is the UEFA president, and he was in, where was he quoted here? It was in the Italian media outlet La Pressa. And they asked him. Now, remember, it's Italian media, so of course he's trying to be nice to him. He's trying to butter him up. And, you know, you get this. I get this, why he said it, right? He said, quote, I'll do that again, but better. He said, quote, Italy must qualify for Euro 2024. Otherwise, it will be a disaster. Mm. The Italian national team is too important, but I think it will beat Ukraine. Now, taken in one context, it's an offhand comment to an Italian media organization being nice to the Italian national team. You think, fine. The trouble is, he's the president of UEFA. Yeah. And this is why, you know, we've hopefully learned some lessons in recent times. You don't elect utterly unsuitable people to high political office. Oh, hi, Argentina. You don't do it because what they say actually matters. If Dunny says it, or I say it about Italy-Ukraine, it doesn't matter what we say, whether we want Italy or we want Ukraine to make it to the European Championship. It doesn't matter. Mm. But for Seferin to say it, it does matter. There is a responsibility which comes with office. There is a responsibility with heading up this organization. And hopefully these people in future might be a bit more boring and less colorful than Seferin and certainly Infantino and the likes of Sepp Blatter, UEFA, FIFA, whoever. Because once you've said that, it's out there. It's out there in the ecosystem. Now, I'm not saying for one second, and we're not saying here, there's corruption involved. I can't prove corruption. I don't know corruption, right? So I'm not alleging that at all. But when that comment is out there, I prefer Italy to be in the European Championship than Ukraine. That's basically what he's saying here. It's a straight shoot between these two for second spot in the group. Once that's out there and I'm the head of UEFA, that splinters down, right? That trickles down to people. That goes to maybe a bunch of referees having lunch that afternoon before the game. Mm. Maybe that's something one of the VAR referees read in the newspaper before he went to work that evening. And maybe, subconsciously, I don't know, I hope so, if it's true, maybe they were a bit like, is that a penalty? Mm. Is it? And I think that's human nature. I don't allege corruption at all here. But I do think there is an element here where Seferin has opened this conversation up to, is it a penalty? And would UEFA prefer Italy to be in the competition than Ukraine? Would they rather have Ukraine in the playoffs because there's more Ukraine games and there'd be a massive neutral following to watch Ukraine for obvious reasons? So I don't know. What he said was so careless and so thoughtless, Danny. All I kept thinking watching this incident on the Tuesday morning was, you've got to be so careful when you're in a position of responsibility what you say. It's why presidents and prime ministers are supposed to have speechwriters, and they agonize over words and phrases, and when they say things off the cuff, or they're total Trumpian morons, you think to yourself, oh, that's probably not the right person to be in that role, right? Yeah. And this is the Seferin thing. I just, is there any chance here that any of that could possibly even subconsciously be true?
Yeah, you hope not. And by the way, I said knockout. I should probably have clarified that with sending him to the playoffs. Sure. Yeah, listen, I hope that's not the case. But again, these are the challenges, right? These are the challenges are being super aware of a macro level and a micro level of what you're saying when you have that much power. Because it certainly seems like when you put it in print, you take zero context from it. What he is saying is that he doesn't want Ukraine in the Euros. He wants Italy in the Euros. It's pretty straightforward. And this is what he expects to happen. So, yeah, man, if you're Ukrainian or you find yourself rooting for Ukraine, you've got a really bitter taste in your mouth after what you saw in the build up to this match and specifically what you saw in the dying moments of added extra time.
Can you imagine it was Richard Masters, head of the Premier League, and he's interviewed today and they say, oh, it's Man City, Liverpool coming up on Saturday, Richard. What do you think of the game? And he says, well, Liverpool have got to win. Liverpool have to win. If Liverpool don't win, it will be a tragedy. It will be a disaster. And then the last minute of that game, Man City don't get a penalty to win the game against Man City. Yeah. What do you think would happen on the back pages of the UK press, of the international media, on SiriusXM FC, on international broadcasters, when Richard Masters is then in the crowd and it cuts to Richard Masters and his face is grey and stone cold because he's like, oh my God, I was speaking to a British newspaper or it was speaking to the Liverpool Echo, so I wanted to say something pro-Liverpool. I ended up saying, it'll be amazing if Liverpool won the Premier League. It's all I really want to see. I mean, that's the equivalent, right?
Yeah, and Howard Webb would be right next to him and go, high five, good job. I'm not the one that has to take the bullet. No strays for me this weekend.
Oh, I can't believe it. Anyway, I can't believe it. And yeah, I can believe it, but it was a clear penalty. I wanted to ask you about this France story. Not that many great international break stories, but I did like this one. Only because they beat the Rockers of Gibraltar 14-0. If you do ever get the chance to go to Gibraltar, I would recommend it because you can get like a litre of Jack Daniels for like £7. An unbelievable duty-free spot. I wonder why the Brits are so keen to keep hold of it. And the other element of it, of course, is that you can ride the cable car up to the top of the rock. And you have never seen a rock covered in so much seagull shit anywhere in the world. So it's a real feat. Sorry, Tim. Sorry, seagulls. But it's not that so much. It's the fact it was 14-0. And I wanted to ask you here, Danny, about Didier Deschamps at halftime. It's 7-0. He's the France manager.
Yeah.
And there's a video doing the rounds of him at halftime, essentially saying, the record is 10-0, which I think is the qualification, European World Cup qualification record. He says, the record is 10-0. You could smash this. Don't hold back, boys. Let's have more of the same in the second half. They go from 7-0 to 14-0, a record-breaking victory. Now, some people have said, well done, Didier. Grind them into the dirt. Others have said, où est la compassion? So, Danny, where do you stand on it, having played for many years? Ever been winning so much you eased off, or winning so much you crushed them?
No, I mean, we always, I think every team that I was on, when it got 6 or 7, you just were like, left foot only, guys, left foot only. Just take your touches left foot only. I mean, I just talked to Taika Waititi, unbelievable director, actor, filmmaker, whose next goal wins based on Thomas Rongen and his time down in America Samoa after Australia beat them 31-0 in qualifying, World Cup qualifying. I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's egregious as seeing Romelu Lukaku on his phone in the 60th minute on the bench for Belgium. I think you know, if we had a problem, I mean, it's competition, right? Competition. And at some point, it's up to Gibraltar, playing with a little pride, drop as many bodies as you can in the box and just kick the living piss out of the ball, height, width, and distance as far as you can away from your goal. So it's a competition factor. I do think in a subtopic, there is a serious conversation to be had about trying to create a more level playing field to then see some of these teams actually develop to then compete with some of these heavyweights. So that's a conversation for another day. But yeah, I don't have a problem because I think it sets mentality. And I think that's what Didier Deschamps in, again, what is it, a third cycle of being manager for France, that he's looking to kind of pinch a little something else out of this group and bleed kind of this new experience in, these younger players into this cycle of players and to that older cycle of players, just to continue that mentality. But again, I have more of a problem seeing a professional footballer at the international level on the bench with his phone after he dropped four goals, thinking like, how in the world is this allowed at any professional level, much less the national team level?
Did he get in trouble for that? I totally missed that story. Did he, was there any repercussions at all?
No.
Don't know. Maybe we should call him. He's got his phone on him. The 14-0, I wanted to ask you about humiliation either on the field or off the field, because we had an interesting chat about this on Monday. How do they go on, Gibraltar, in that game? Like, there's a bit in this game, it's 89 minutes in, and they're 12-0 down to France.
Come on, boys, we can do it. Two more. Let's give up two more.
And France bring on Olivier Giroud, who scores in the 89th and 92nd minute. Yeah. To make it 14-0. Like, take us into the mind of some of these Gibraltar players, some of whom are a bit like, you know, our friend Danny Higginbottom played for Gibraltar because end of his career, wanted to play some international football, had a heritage there and was able to play, I think, three or four games he played for him. And why wouldn't you do it? I spoke to him about it before. You know, absolutely. I got the call from San Marino. I'll be playing next week. Probably
did you find? Have you figured out where San Marino is? I know you said it was the southeast of Italy. Yeah.
But in my mind, I was thinking of a map that I was looking at the top side.
I was like, as soon as you said, it's in the south of Italy, I was like, no, it's not.
No, screwed that up completely. No, screwed it completely. Not. But I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for... and someone texted me during the show and was like, that's completely fucking wrong, you're an idiot. Yeah. Sorry, Tim. And I am, that's true. But like...
And it wasn't me this time.
No, it wasn't. It actually wasn't, no. How tough is it to go through those next few minutes? Mm. I mean, look, for Gibraltar, it isn't like, you know, when Man United was 7-0 down to Liverpool or something, right?
Yeah,
where
it's
you
different.
Didn't expect it. They expected it. But the last few minutes must be so tough.
That game was lost before they even stepped on the field. I know I've said this to you before on SiriusXM FC. I know I've said it here. There is a psychological element that you've lost the game before you ever step on the field. You know, everyone's talking, everyone's reading, everyone's scrolling. Everyone's like, oh God, here we go. Like, oh, it's Mbappe. Mbappe. Like, look at Giroud. Imagine him in a banana hammock pinching his own nipples. I bet you he'll do that if he scores two goals in the 89th minute. It just, things happen, man. And you step on the field and like the first time they start pinging the ball around and you're like, holy f**k, what is happening? And sorry, Tim, you're just like, oh yeah, done. No chance. I'm going to give it the old college try. I'm going to have the Americana dream. I'm going to work hard and tackle. And I was like, bing, 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 bing. And you're like, what the f*** just happened? Sorry, Tim. In that moment.
Should they be able to throw the towel in, Danny? Like, I always
think. No, because it's pride.
Be able to, but isn't it more prideful to be, like, when a boxer is getting beaten so badly,
a
towel can be thrown in. Can a coach not
but
throw
that's
in
more about death. 7-0? I mean, that's more about avoiding death.
Emotional death?
Yeah, well, yeah, pride.
Thinking about the poor Gibraltar goalkeeper.
They knew. Everybody knew. No, I mean, a prideful performance is what? Maybe losing 3-0 to France? It's France. I mean, like, all you do is you just try your best. And I've been a part of some terrible teams. I've been a part of some teams that just could not stop losing. And you know exactly who the weakest person on the team is. You know how you got to protect everybody. You know you got to do your own job. It's tough, man. It's not fun. And yeah, you know, all of your friends, your homies, your neighbors, they're going to bust the living piss out of you the moment that you get home and be like, man, 14-0, bro. You guys are terrible. And you're just like, yeah, I know, right? Oh, wow, terrible. But, you know, at some point there's going to be a laugh, right? And be like,
yes.
Hey, I was a part of history. What? You were a part of history? 14-0, bro. And you can actually laugh about it at some point. But yeah, egotistically, not it's a punch in the face.
Yeah, probably not tonight. In about 6 to 7 years, maybe. Yeah. It might be quite fun. And there is hope for the Rockers of Gibraltar. San Marino scored in a third straight match. They have still never won a game of football. Did you know San Marino is kind of the north east of Italy? It's a little municipality quite near the east side, there not on the south like I thought it was. I mean, I've been to Florence, which is kind of south, and I vaguely remember it being there, but you know, it's a tough time. Anyway, that's where it is, which I definitely know now. Apologies to that listener who was furious with me.
Furious. Yeah.
Never won a competitive game. They hadn't scored a goal in 2 years. Then they scored. So they scored against Denmark on the 17th of October. They then scored against Kazakhstan on the 17th of November. It was the first time they'd scored in two games in a row for 18 years. They then scored in another loss, though. So there's a loss to Denmark.
Finland, right?
2-1. 3-1 to Kazakhstan, then Finland. They scored against Finland. It was a 97th minute penalty. They'd lost the game 2-1. But because they'd scored again, they celebrated like wild, boozed up banshees. And God bless them for it, I say.
Love it. Yeah, love it. That's... Again, it's you. What was the municipality of San Marino? Somewhere around 30,000 people, 35,000 people. I mean, to be able to even think about competing, you know, it's I think there's something special, something beautiful. Even your dying little crinkled old black heart of yours, it's you can find a little bit of joy in there. It's cracking with a little bit of joy.
Yeah. No. That's international break covered. I think that's enough. We're back. Well, you're here next week. You're on holiday.
No.
So give us a quick preview of what's coming up, because I'm annoyed about it, really, because we've got MLS Cup coming up. We're in the last few dates of it, but you're you're off having a nice time. So you'll be watching it on the beach.
I'm going to be on a few different beaches. I'm taking a cruise. I'm taking the family out. We're going to go to New York for a couple days. My family's never been to New York. We found a cruise leaving Manhattan out of New York. We're going to go down to Bermuda, hit the triangle, going to go to St. Martin where they land planes and take planes off right where you're on the beach in the water. It's going to be incredible. Hopefully, by the way, 747, when that thing spits sand, it really hurts. We'll hit Dominican Republic. We're going to hit Puerto Rico, go see kind of the castles on the water, iguanas the size of iguanas. And then we'll head on home. It's like a 10-day cruise. So I'm going to be having a blast. I'm going to be out of touch and have a few alcoholic beverages while I'm gone.
Yeah. But you'll be back by, I mean, you're back by MLS Cup final, obviously. You're back by the conference finals. You just kind of semis. When
no,
you're back?
I will be back. I think you and I will be doing Week in the Tackle on the 7th of December. So it'll be a little bit late, a couple days late, but we will be back on the 7th. That Thursday, we'll release a new episode. So I'll just miss one Week in the Tackle, but maybe I'll send you a video or I'll send you a little message while I'm sipping an adult beverage, looking off the edge of a boat.
In that 10 minutes of sobriety you're going to have. Well, have a wonderful time, mate. We'll keep on pressing on without you. I haven't got a day off now until January 12th. So, you know, have a wonderful time on that cruise. And think of me planning to...
Hold on a second. Christmas you just had a family vacation where I saw, because your wife and I follow each other on Instagram.
Yes.
Did I see some s'mores? Did I see you partaking in
some
s'mores?
Yes. See? No, well, it wasn't. So what I'll tell you, I did talk about you actually. So I went to this, what's the Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos or whatever, right? And they did like a thing on the Isle of Wight. It was very out of place. It was freezing cold and near raining, but it was like skulls and lights everywhere and all that sort of stuff. In a place called Black Gang Chine, which is one of the oldest fairgrounds ever to have existed. The first time there was a theme park there was like 1810 or something like that. Okay. So it's all quite cool. I love all that sort of stuff. But then you got given marshmallows on sticks to then put into a fire. And I was saying to, so it's me and there's like four brother and sisters my sister's got, and there's a bunch of kids, like seven kids running around.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we've got marshmallows on sticks. Have we got any biscuits in the kids' bags? And they were like, yeah, we got like digestive biscuits. I was like, oh, we could do s'mores. We can make s'mores here, guys. We can do this. And no one knew what s'mores were. No one in the team, children or adults. And I was telling them that was a feature of the program multiple times over the last couple of years. And so I did a thing where I put the marshmallow in the flames, and they're all like being wimps about it, not putting the marshmallow in. Like, get it in. Yeah. Get it burnt.
Yeah, you're burning a little bit.
And I was closing it into a digestive biscuit, putting it off it, and giving it to people. And everyone thought it was weird that I was shoving
Americana,
it in
their- baby. Americana. Yes.
I took a piece of Dunny-inspired Americana to a Victorian theme park doing a South American Mexican festival on the Isle of Wight in October.
Did you remind them of eating s'mores or finding s'mores in D.C. during the All-Star game, the night before the All-Star game, and then running to grab me to say, they've got s'mores! They've got s'mores! And then not remembering the next day?
I don't remember anything about that, though I have seen pictures of it. I do remember having an extended conversation with Ricky Pooja, I assume he's his girlfriend, and no one spoke the same language as each other, certainly.
That was
and
fun least to watch.
Of all me. Least of all me. Danny, we're out of time. Have a lovely holiday, mate. We'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. We'll put something out next Tuesday, like Tom Rennie and Friends. Gotta make some friends now. That's going to be annoying. This has been the Week in the Tackle podcast. That's Brian Dunny-Dunseth. I'm Tom Rennie. Tim Horsey produced the program. We'll see you next time.